Welcome to the B2B Influence Spotlight on Industry Game Changers podcast. I'm Paula Keoki, founder and CEO of Outward Media. Outward Media is a trusted data partner to Fortune 2000 businesses and startups alike. We provide the highest quality audience data to fuel engaged, integrated, omnichannel campaigns. Our mission is to deliver real data, real results, and invaluable reach to real people. Welcome, everyone. This is Paula Keoki. I am founder and CEO of Outward Media. We go by OMI. And this is the Marketing Vanguard Leading Voices in B2B Innovation podcast. Today, we're fortunate enough to have my good long-term friend, Dave Nugent, who is the Executive Vice President of Data and Analytics at Fusion 92, which is a cutting-edge performance marketing agency that develops strong ROI for their clients. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks, Paula. Great to be here.
Happy to have Dave here. So let's dive in, because I know you're a wealth of information and everybody's always looking for ROI. And I know you have strong background in this. So start with this. With data playing a central role in modern advertising, what new technologies or analytic strategies are you leveraging to enhance marketing effectiveness across digital, social, and traditional channels at Fusion?
I would say that today, it's all about connecting the dots. We find that if we can enrich B2B data with other data, let's say, we can achieve much greater insights. It's one thing to have a complete picture, which you provide, of these businesses and the people that work there. But if we can connect other data sets to those individuals to gain a greater understanding of who are the people making the decisions? What are their attitudes? What are their behaviors? What are their demographics? If we can connect those dots, we have a much better chance of customizing not only how to target, but we also can customize the messaging, the channel mix for optimal performance. It's also connecting the dots, not just to other data sets to give you that greater view of the person, but it's also using data to maybe connect the dots to the identifiers of the individuals. We've talked about this a lot. We'll probably talk about it a little bit more here today, but being able to reach these business executives, these decision makers, using channels that are usually reserved for B2C marketing is a real game changer for us. That was one of the big innovations. And I know that it's not maybe the most rare things these days, but if we can connect Joe Smith, the CEO of XYZ company, to a consumer database and find out things like age, presence of children, kind of cars that they drive, value of their home, interests, what kind of hobbies they have, that is really useful in being able to customize the messaging, hit on those hot buttons, the comments that will make, or the talk tracks that will make Joe Smith want to react to your advertisement. But being able to know that Joe Smith also has a home IP address or a mobile advertising ID or a connected TV ID or any of the hashed emails at the personal level, having connected those dots between Joe Smith, the president and CEO of XYZ company, with Joe Smith, you know, the resident at 123 Main Street, we now have the ability, like I said, to customize messaging, but also reach Joe Smith in all of those different ad buying platforms, whether it could be the Metas, it could be TikTok, it could be X, it could be any of these, those become fair game because we've made that connection. It's still a B2B offer, but we're using consumer channels to try to promote and evangelize.
And so how do these new technologies or various channels impact the campaign strategy then?
It just gives us more options. If, let's say, it's a traditional B2B marketer and they get a list, a very custom list of certain businesses based on SIC code, number of employees, maybe they're targeting only businesses that have certain executives that carry a certain title or a level of job seniority, that's the starting point and that's really important. But if I can, like I said, make that connection to that executive at home, now we can use these identity graphs. We've all heard about identity graphs.
Mm-hmm.
We can use these identity graphs to say, all right, if Joe Smith lives at 123 Main Street, that's great. We can reach Joe Smith now at home, maybe deliver him a piece of direct mail that is promoting a B2B service for his business. But we also know that he lives at 123 Main Street. So what other identifiers are connected to Joe Smith? Not necessarily the executive, but Joe Smith, the resident. I have his home IP address. I have his personal email address, hashed, of course. We have maybe mobile ad IDs. I talked about CTV IDs. We have all of these new identifiers as part of these graphs that allows our media strategists to candidly put together a program that may historically have just focused on direct mail, maybe some LinkedIn advertising, maybe some email advertising. Those are all great. But if you want to make it bigger, you can say, all right, let's use those, but we're going to augment it now with emails that go to the personal inbox, ads that are served to that person's connected TV, ads that are served in social channels or other digital channels. So being able to just make your media strategy that much more diverse gives you more touch points. And you can basically measure that. You can say, all right, where are we getting traction? Where aren't we getting traction? And if you can start optimizing your channel mix based upon knowing what's working and what's not working, now you're really in the catbird seat. Now you're really able to maximize your spend. You're able to maximize ROI. All those things become available. And we find that's where a lot of people like to go. It's just about diversity. And we find that it's really helped our clients be more judicious in where they spend their money.
And you've been talking about doing the direct mail to the residents for years with me. And I think you were doing it before it was really catching on to circle back to people being interested in direct mail again. So seems like you were a little bit of a pioneer there on that one.
It was 15. You guys have mastered the ability to link the residential to the business address. Before that was available, using digital signals to make it a reality, we were doing it the old school way. We were basically saying, all right, Jane Smith works at a company in Excelsior, Minnesota, and we're going to do a 10-mile radius around that business address, and we're going to look for other Jane Smiths. That's probably a bad example of a name because there's going to be a lot of Jane Smith. But usually people have fairly rare names, especially if you try to look for them inside of a tight mile radius. But just sticking with my example, if the business was in Excelsior, Minnesota, and we drew a 10-mile radius around there, we would say, are there any Jane Smiths that live in that 10-mile radius, assuming most people live close proximity to their offices? And we had this whole process where we would say, if we have a one-to-one match, great, it's all solved. Now I can connect Jane Smith, the executive at XYZ Company, Excelsior, Minnesota, to the Jane Smith that lives on Main Street 2 miles away. But oftentimes we would have a situation where we would have multiple Jane Smiths and we had to say, which one's the right one? And we had these custom algorithms that basically looked at, you know, who's closer? One's 2 miles away, one's 8 miles away. The one that's closer might be more accurate, but that's just part of the program or the part of the formula. The other one might be looking at occupation codes or looking at education levels or looking at income levels or home values. Because if somebody has a very prestigious title, you might think they're probably more highly educated. They have different occupation codes. Maybe they're a professional. And so we had these decision trees that would help us figure out which Jane Smith is likely to be that business owner in Excelsior, Minnesota. And so we built that out and we were dealing with a communications company that was trying to sell voice, data, internet type packages for small, medium-sized businesses. And Paula, I would tell you, they were experiencing some diminishing returns on their program, their direct mail program, and they didn't know why. And we just had this hunch that they were getting caught by gatekeepers. Like the offers were not ever really getting to those high level executives, even at small, medium sized businesses. And so we said, keep doing those direct mail campaigns to the office, but why don't you augment it and do a direct mail campaign to those decision makers at home using that process that I just described a second ago. And we literally saw a 2.5 times improvement in performance. Wow.
Wow.
And one of the cool features of this particular campaign is we actually leveraged the consumer insights in the B2B offer. So if the B2B offer was selling internet and voice and data, we knew that the person that's Jane, let's say it was me, Dave Nugent, was the guy that we were targeting. We might look at his consumer profile, this is 10 years ago, and say, oh, okay, this guy is this age, he's married, he's got kids under the age of whatever, young children in the household. How can we leverage that in the way that we talk to, this guy who is a president owner of a small, medium-sized business? Maybe we'll say something like, the more efficient you are at work, the more time you have for the important things in life. And you actually showed a picture of a dad throwing a football to a young child. So you are using consumer insights to establish relevance with the decision maker, knowing that even though it's a B2B offer being delivered to his home, he's likely going to consider that for his business. So he brings that postcard to his business and he does some research and he calls and says, I want to learn about your internet, voice, and data program because I do have a small, medium-sized business and I love gaining efficiencies. How can you help me, Mr. Communications Company? And we just saw it was a 2.5 times
That's a
improvement
lot.
performance. Yes,
Yes.
just by simply augmenting a tried and true direct mail campaign that was going to the business, we augmented it with a consumer touch. And it was really an effective, and it ran for years. It was a really great program that we had going.
Was the messaging or the creative to the office different from the one at home?
It was.
So you pulled in the emotional connection for the one at home.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we weren't actually involved with the execution of the B2B. They just said, look, this is what we're mailing for the B2B stuff. This is the messaging. What would you recommend? And we just did some basic segmentation. We did like the young professional with, or the younger professional with children. Maybe it's an older empty nester. Yeah, like we had two or th I think we had three segments. And so we personalized the message based upon the segment that person fell into. And that was the nature of the postcard that we mailed out. But it was an emotional appeal and it had a big impact. And now, today, going back to what we started this conversation with, we can do that now across all channels. We don't just have to do direct mail. If we've connected those dots and we know Paula Keoki, the founder, president, CEO of OMI, also lives at 123 Main Street, and I have all these different connection options for 123 Main Street, why not pepper those digital channels, those social channels, the direct mail channels with a business-oriented message? Just at this time, it's just being delivered through consumer channels. It's really effective.
I occasionally get a B2B offer at home.
Yeah.
Just some, maybe it's coming from you. And
Absolutely, maybe.
I know you've in the last year or so incorporated intent data as well, correct?
Absolutely. That's another part of connecting those dots. It's one thing to try to curate a list where you're focusing on the traditional filters, SIC code, number of employees, years in business, types of executive, et cetera. Maybe you layer in some of those demographic attributes and attitudinal categories on top of the decision maker at those businesses. That's a great way of connecting dots. But now, with all this intent data that's out there, why not layer that on? Why not fuse that into the process? It doesn't give you the scale you might always want. But most of the campaigns that we run at Fusion 92, it's a waterfall. Like you've got the really targeted audiences, and maybe it's the perfect B2B attributes, it's the perfect consumer attributes on the decision makers. And then it's also these intent signals, and maybe it's also really precise geographies. You layer all those different elements together, but you've got a very small audience, you can't scale. But then you go to the next level and you might say, all right, now take out the intent signal and that, and then you keep going down and down to get to the reach that you might require. But all of our campaigns have that waterfall or cascading effect where we want to prioritize on the best audiences and then backfill just to get the performance that the client needs. Every time you go down that waterfall, it's presumed that you're going to be spending more either for a conversion or more for an impression, but you're going to spend more for whatever stage of the funnel you're in. But it all works out in the end. You blend it all together. Cumulative ROI is what you need it to be. We just like to prioritize, though, where we think we're going to get the most action.
Yeah, and you guys are good
Yeah, thanks.
at it. So,
Good data.
thank you. So, looking ahead, what key trends or innovations in data and analytics do you believe will shape the future of B2B marketing?
That's a good question. I would say this is everyone's talking about it. Might as well keep going with it. It's the AIs.
AI.
We're all AI. And I think, but I'm gonna give you an AI application that I think is a little bit more narrowly focused. I really do believe in optimization on the content that we're serving up. And a lot of these digital campaigns will allow you to see within the ad logs, the exhaust data, information that will afford you the luxury of tweaking things, what's working, what's not working. You get your data scientists involved and you're mining all this unbelievable data. And you can optimize for targeting, of course. You can optimize for channel mix, but you can also optimize for content. So you're always wanting to split test different content, but historically it's been pretty cost prohibitive or slow because it's a labor-intensive process. Unless you have it preloaded. But I think with AI, a lot of the data that's coming back from all these campaigns, it's so rich in detail. A human would be just too difficult to try to interpret all this data, mine it, tease out the relevant insights that can steer you into an optimized piece of creative. But if you can use AI to interpret all of this feedback data and on the fly, come up with optimized messaging and AI is generating it. I think that's going to be one of the more near-term advancements in, and I know a lot of people are already doing it. I'm not saying that this is a revolutionary idea. People are doing it. I just think it's going to become more commonplace to see people use all this data to drive optimization of the creative, the messaging, because that is a huge part of determining this, what determines the success of the campaign. There's always been everyone already always had the different ratios. Some people would say 40, 40, 20, some would whatever, but it's targeting, it's messaging, which kind of goes channel selection and also offer. Offer's got to be really good. And if it's targeted really well, but the delivery, the way you did it stinks, it's not going to matter. Same thing if you have a great look for the piece and the list is great, but the offer stinks, that's probably not going to work as well. But if we can optimize the customization of the message, the look and feel to reflect what we're seeing in the logs within the data, man, that's game changing. You can show incremental gains very quickly.
So
So I think that's around the corner.
you have case history on that now you're doing
Yeah,
that.
we're optimizing creative, we're optimizing targeting strategies, we're optimizing channel mix based on our interpretation of all this data. The interpretation and the deployment of the insights that come from the mining of the data is just getting quicker and quicker as the technologies get better and better. Being able to make those optimizations on the that's where we're seeing some big advancement.
And one of the things that I've been impressed with you all, I've always been impressed with you, but impressed with you all is the fact that you now have data residing in-house. I know you have one of the big report, what do you call credit reporting companies data in-house with predictive analytics overlay, which is more B2C. And obviously you work with our data and then you can blend back and forth. Not as many agencies are doing that. And I think that really sets you all apart.
Yeah, it's pretty rare these days to have a complete installation of a consumer database and a business database. Like that used to be fairly commonplace, but with all the new data laws, data governance that's out there, I think a lot of the compilers got a little nervous. They're like, chain of custody. If I give a complete install to an agency and they don't have the right processes in place to ensure chain of custody and they know what data retention rules are and all, it can get dicey. And so I think most of these data companies, especially ones that are in the credit rate reporting space. And just to be clear, we don't have the regulated credit data. We have the non-regulated marketing data, but it's still coming from one of the big three that are very conservative. They just took the path of what? We don't want to deal with these issues. So we're just going to go ahead and take the data away from all of these agencies, all of these brokers, and we'll let them gain access to it through clean room integrations where everything is obfuscated and tokenized, or we'll maybe get grant them access through APIs. That's great, but there's no substitute for having a copy in-house to do all the things that we like to do. And fortunately for us, knock on wood, we've been good stewards of the data. We've kept our nose clean. We do things the right way, and we protect the data as if it's our own. And I think that has given us a slight advantage. A lot of agencies have spent billions of dollars to get data in-house, buying big data companies that compile it. Fusion 92 obviously doesn't have the desire to go spend billions on data companies, especially when we happen to have the same data as those big boys. We just do it through licensing that has somewhat been grandfathered because of who we are and how we've been good stewards of the data. So yeah, we're excited for having that capability and then continuing to evolve and bring, we're also, we like to think of ourselves as kind of innovators. What can we do with the data that is not only permissible, but is value added? Like, what can we do that, you know, we're not out there just trying to sell data at the cheapest level. We're trying to think of creative ways of using the data, tie it to technology to deliver real value within the industry. And that's why we love working with you, Paula. Like, we know that your data is great. If we can add something to it to be a value, it sounds corny, to be a value added reseller. Yeah. What can we do with the data to make it more valuable in the marketplace and that we can brag about? We can't brag about the compilation and the maintenance, that's your claim to fame. But if I can show, you know, here's a piece of technology that dispenses it or mines it a little bit differently, great, I'm going to promote the heck out of that. If I can show a process that connects those dots between B2B data and maybe consumer data and identity graph data, like, we'll do that too. So that's always been something that we strive for.
And what I appreciate is, even though you're a good size agency, you're still nimble. Okay. And the bureaucracy's not there, the red tape's not there. And knowing you, as long as I've known you in your association with Fusion 92, you guys really care about the client, the ROI, and do the best job for your client. That being said, how does anybody get in touch with you?
It's very nice. Yeah, Fusion 92 is fusion92.com as a website. My name is David Nugent, and it's d.nugent@fusion92.com. And yeah, I love talking to anyone in the industry, whether it's a data nerd, whether it's an agency that wants to figure out how to use data more creatively to drive their campaigns. We work with all types. We're not like one of those agencies that says, we'll only work with you if we do everything for you. We'll a la carte things. If someone comes along and says, man, we need someone that can do everything from studio work to media strategy to execution to measurement and data curation, all that other stuff, we love those too. But yeah, I appreciate the putting that out there. And anyone that wants to talk, feel free to reach out to me.
Yep. All right. I greatly appreciate your time today, and I'm sure you and I will be talking soon.
Sounds good, Paula. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Paula Keoki, and thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media, and don't forget to rate or review the podcast wherever you listen. Your feedback helps us grow and inspire others. If you're a successful business leader or marketing professional with insights to share, we'd love to feature you as a guest. Visit outwardmedia.com/podcast to learn more. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and connect with us on social media to join the conversation. Visit outwardmedia.com to explore how we can help take your strategic audience building to the next level. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.